This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and the book that we're talking about, Glow Kids, How Screen Addiction is Hijacking Our Kids and How to Break the Trance. Our guest is Dr. Nicholas Carderas. He's a clinical assistant professor at Stony Brook and an addiction specialist. And lately, he's been in big demand because this is a real phenomenon, screen addiction, big problem among our kids. And one of the things that is happening across the country is we're equipping our kids with iPads and devices and putting computers in the classroom. And is this a good idea, Dr. Carderas?
It's a tragedy of national and international proportion. Have I said that strongly enough?
Tell us what you really think now. Don't hold back.
Yeah. It's not a good idea. I mean, we've effectively been conducting a global experiment on the whole generation of children without any vetting of any of this, these devices or technology. It's funny. I'm friends with, the comedian Paula Poundstone is a anti-screen activist, and mm-hmm. She's pretty open about it. She talks about it because she's had some issues about it in her family. And she went and she tells the story of how she was talking to Senator Barbara Boxer's chief of staff about these screen devices and, you know, maybe we shouldn't have them in the classrooms because effectively the school districts are now complicit in, getting kids hooked on these devices without really any research showing that there's any educational benefit to it. And the chief of staff said to her, well, we're going to need some NIH studies before we take these things out of the classrooms. And Paula Poundstone said, shouldn't we have had the studies before we put them into the classroom?
Yeah.
We need the studies to remove them, but not to get them in.
Yeah.
But there have been literally at this point now hundreds of studies, which I'm amazed about is there's so much research out there now that shows some of these potential problems, and yet, most parents, I think, intuitively know that there's a problem, but they sort of shrug and say, well, I mean, it's the way things are today, even though it's only been in the last 10 years that really screens have become so ubiquitous. And then they say the schools gave my children the screen, so how bad can it be?
Yeah. Well, as a parent or a grandparent, how do you identify the signs of screen addiction in your kids?
Well, you know, it's similar clinical criteria to any other kind of addiction. The main benchmark is the addictive substance or behavior negatively impacting that child's life or adversely affecting his life? And so by that, we look at things like, is the child's school beginning to suffer? Did a child who used to play baseball now no longer engage in those activities? Are his interpersonal relationships mm-hmm. suffering? So those are the initial reflections.
Actually, that's a pretty standard criterion in addiction is that, you know, people can drink, people can smoke a little marijuana, mm-hmm. but I think, or gamble occasionally, go to Las Vegas, mm-hmm. have a good time, Atlantic City. But when it begins to interfere with interpersonal relationships or with professional activities, or in the case of kids, educational activities, that's where you draw the line, right? It's that it's not just a little harmless recreation, right?
And then when you start, then as a corollary to that, so then you start seeing some lying behavior about how much usage the person's engaged in, right? A person will lie about their drinking, mm-hmm. they'll lie about their screen behavior.
Some element of denial.
Denial, mood dysregulation. It's one thing that we do know is screens mood dysregulate. They create sort of this agitation in kids. There's a new DSM diagnosis called mood dysregulation disorder, which a few of us think is a direct byproduct of our digital technologies. But those kinds of things are what we look for. I've had kids who have lied about their screen usage. They almost flunked out of high school because of their gaming. Those kinds of things are the red flags to look for.
And so what age should kids start with screens? I mean, I'm faced with this kind of situation myself because I got a young 10-month-old in our family, and we're enjoying playing with him with standard toys. But, you know, when is it permissible to give him some screen time?
Well, the technology companies would leave you to believe that literally, and I'm not being facetious here, at birth, the technology companies,
right.
I kid you not, there was the a newborn infant rocker that was for sale in the toy department,
wow.
the infant department, and it had a little screen device over the rocker where the newborn could look up at a digital screen that had squares and triangles and stars, and the box said, appropriate for newborns, educational.
Hey.
And, you know, and I joke around saying that you could, you know, take a bag of broken glass, and if you write educational on it, some people will think, oh, it's educational. So the tech companies will say, right out of the womb, put a kid in front of a screen. I would follow the lead of Steve Jobs and some of the other tech engineers and the people who are involved in Silicon Valley, who, and this was written in the New York Times Magazine, did a whole article about this, how Silicon Valley, they were putting their kids in Waldorf schools, non-technological
yes.
Waldorf schools, until they were age 10 or 12.
Yeah.
My personal recommendation is interactive screens are too powerful for elementary school children. Their brains need to develop their own intrinsic sense of active imagination. We talk about developmentally, one of the most powerful things you can do for a child is to allow them to be bored and develop their own innate sense of creativity
right.
and their own sense of brain development.
I will tell you, from my childhood, I was an only child, and boredom was a great impetus to little projects, getting out there, you know, roaming
right.
around the neighborhood, it got me going. It was a motivator.
And, you know, and then you have to use your imagination, especially if you're an only child. George Carlin he had a great line before he died about a boy with a stick. Are there any boys with sticks anymore? You know, going outside
right.
and making believe that that stick is,
right.
you know, whatever you want to create out of it. But what's happened now is we're robbing
our children. It was a Roman sword fight.
It was a
Civil
right.
War musket. It was any number of things.
You could build a fort. You can do this. You can do, but what we're doing is we're pre-programming our kids with imagery, and we're essentially atrophying their imagination by programming such powerful imagery. One of my favorite bands from back in the day, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young.
Yeah.
When MTV first came out with music videos, this is when MTV still used to show music videos, and they were very militantly against making a music video. And Graham Nash, and I'm paraphrasing him, had said, we don't want to program into our fans the imagery that their mind's eye sees when they hear our music. We want those to be spontaneous or organic. We want them to make their own music video in their own mind. And that rang true for me, because I remember life before MTV and life after MTV. And any song that I've heard before MTV, I have my own, it brings up in me my own memories, my own sort of mental imagery. And any song that I've seen the video for, a music video for, the video of the song pops into my brain automatically.
Right. I think the threshold for that was Michael Jackson's Thriller. I don't think anybody can
right.
Forget the imagery that was introduced with that. Didn't leave very much to the imagination, and probably terrified a lot
That's
of kids
it.
In that generation.
And I don't think you can hear that song and not see the image. So the
right.
converse of that is, it's almost even if you didn't want to see that. So that's what we're doing to kids. We're sort of programming all
yeah.
this powerful imagery into them. And then I think that makes their own imagination a vestigial organ at that point.
Right. Well, so coming back to the question, though, and this is a tough question because you yourself have young kids. What age should kids start? And how do you put kids on a digital diet? That's really problematic, because it's actually, I mean, as challenging as it is to keep kids eating healthy, because we're in a very intrusive food environment, it's actually easier than keeping the intrusive electronic media out of the house.
Which is why I say that, and I've said this in a couple of interviews before, that I treat drug and alcohol addiction, and I will say that it is more difficult to treat digital addiction than drug and alcohol addiction for a couple of reasons. Because, we already have established sort of clinical protocols as to how to treat alcoholism and heroin addiction. We don't have those protocols in place yet, really, for tech addiction is so new. But the other piece of it is a person can be abstinent from drugs and alcohol, and it's almost impossible to be abstinent from technology in this day and age. I mean, it's not impossible if you want to go off the grid, but almost impossible. And so we analogize it more almost to an eating disorder, where a person has to develop a healthy relationship with food rather than being abstinent from food.
Yeah, because you can go to AA for alcohol and never have a drop ever again, but food is something you have to develop a relationship with.
Exactly. And so what I recommend is focusing on prevention rather than treatment, because treatment can be very difficult once you've crossed that line. Mm-hmm. And so you can really help, you know, stop the tide of addiction if you don't expose the kids at too early of an age. You're much more vulnerable to a kid becoming video addicted or screen addicted if you give them an iPad in kindergarten as opposed to letting them be exposed to that in high school. So my recommendations are no interactive screens in elementary school and begin to roll them out cautiously and carefully, depending on how much each individual child can tolerate, and you have to monitor that usage to see whether it begins to become very obsessive with them at around middle school. I would follow that Waldorf Montessori school model where you don't really do that. In my book, I have a tech opt-out letter, and I've been contacted by parents all around the country who are beginning to use it, and I used it for my own children where I had to ask their elementary school, who was beginning to give iPads to the second and third graders, and it was a letter that said to them, essentially, I don't want my children having interactive screens. Here's a website that has all the research why, and please teach them in the traditional manner for the next X period of grades. And I have a good voice at my school's, my kids' school's district, and so they accommodated me, and I've had other parents who've been accommodated when they've been pretty forceful, but I think we as the parents have the power if we advocate for our own children, because I don't know where it happened and all of a sudden we were just supposed to say, oh, okay, let's give kindergartners tablets just because some administrator who was essentially conned by a technology company.
Or sometimes
who
outright
has a
bribe. Outright bribe, because we're talking, there's literally billions of dollars at stake in terms of equipping classrooms with devices.
$60 billion a year. Education technology, yeah. $60 billion a year industry. And so this is a big business. I analogize it somewhat to the cigarette industry in the 1950s. There's a lot of money at stake, and they knew that there were some, they knew that they were carcinogenic, but they didn't care when they promoted, you know, Joe Camel to kids, and it was an issue of raising awareness of what some of these deleterious effects could be, and then finally saying, enough. All right. If you want to be an adult and you want to have, you know, unfettered screen access, have at it. But leave our children alone. Let them develop their brains before you sell them out for a profit.
There are actually countries that are undertaking national initiatives to basically wean kids off of these devices. They're doing some work in China, I understand.
South Korea.
So what's going on that front?
Well, South Korea has 400 tech addiction rehabs. We have one here in the United States in Seattle run by a wonderful clinician, Dr. Hillary Cash, and that's the only tech addiction rehab exclusively devoted to tech addiction here in the United States. But in South Korea, not only do they have 400 tech addiction rehabs, and in China, they've identified that the Chinese Health Organization, the CHO, has identified adolescent tech addiction as their number one health epidemic.
Wow.
And they've identified 20 million Chinese teenagers with having IAD, Internet Addiction Disorder.
Wow.
In China, they have it as an official diagnosis. We don't yet officially have it as a diagnosis here in the United States, although some of us are trying to push the needle that way. We just missed the cut in the last diagnostic Bible. Some of your viewers or listeners may know.
Right.
It was put in the appendix for under further review. Gambling made the cut this time around, but not video game or screen addiction. But in the Far East, they're ahead of the curve in at least acknowledging and treating the problem.
And there's also this concept of digital detox. What does that entail? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Dr. Victoria Dunkley in Los Angeles, she's also a friend and a colleague. She was one of the pioneers here in the United States that started looking at digital detox. And essentially, it's you're unplugging your child for 4 to 6 weeks. Victoria Dunkley had seen over 1,000 kids in the last 10 years, and most of which were being brought to her for other issues. Everything from learning disorders to mood disorders to even spectrum, Asperger's type.
I would imagine obesity and childhood type 2 diabetes might be an indication for getting kids off the grid.
And the other one that isn't commonly thought of is sleep issues, sleep mm-hmm. disorders. Kids who are very screen obsessed or hyperstimulated, it's like a stimulant, so they're sleep dysregulated, mm-hmm. and then that affects their cortisol levels and their obesity rates and everything else. So these kids were coming to Dr. Dunkley, and she would not diagnose or prescribe any medication for any child unless they first went on a digital detox for 4 to 6 weeks to get their brain chemistry back to baseline and then to see what the presenting symptoms were. And she found that from 65% to 70% of her children, her adolescent and child clients, were symptom-free after the digital detox. Some kids went up a grade in their, some kids got tested academically and went up a grade level. Kids who were on medication for ADHD were able to go off medication for ADHD. Kids who were showing signs of real explosive behavior, mood dysregulation types of effects. The other thing that we really didn't talk about that she talks about a lot that I talk about also in my book is it affects our adrenal system and it dysregulates our adrenal system. It puts a young person, and more specifically video gaming, but also other screen experiences, they put the child in essentially the fight or flight response for extended periods of time. Yeah. And so the HPA axis, the hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis, fires up. And rather than just firing up for 30 seconds or 5 minutes, which it's evolutionarily made to fire up for, you have a child who's in fight or flight response for 7 or 8 hours in front of while they're playing a first person shooter game. Mm-hmm. So over time, that creates a very dysregulated child in terms of their adrenal systems. And so we've seen that it takes about 4 to 6 weeks to get that child back to baseline.
Mm-hmm. And this affects cortisol, and it affects counter-regulatory hormones, insulin, and so on. All of those are in play, and this can be very harmful at a crucial developmental stage. We didn't even mention the relationship of video games to violence, which is a controversial issue. You know, there's certainly a desensitization that goes on when you spend hours and hours blowing away bodies.
Right. Well, at Iowa State, Dr. Craig Anderson and the folks at Iowa State really have spent 15 years almost exclusively studying aggression effects of digital media, and they have found the link to be not correlational but causal. And this is hundreds of studies now over tens of thousands of young people, and they looked at effects like behavioral violent episodes in the classroom over the period of, you know, of an academic year for children who started gaming. And it's only common sense. I mean, you know, sometimes I laugh at some of these studies, because if you're going to expose somebody to something that's very violent, obviously, like you said, that you're desensitizing them to violence. Similarly, with sex and pornography, I've had pediatricians this is the first time they're experiencing what they're calling adolescent erectile dysfunction.
Yeah.
Adolescent impotency. Mm-hmm. Because of the desensitization of pornography.
Yeah.
You talked about back in our generation, you know, when you had to find a Playboy.
If you find a Playboy magazine at a garbage can, I mean, you had a field day, you know, but that was
a field
very
day.
Tame
and now
by
you're
comparison.
Live streaming 24/7.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
Right. Okay. So we've got a big problem here. What's today's intelligent medicine call to action, Dr. Carderas? First of all, get your book, because it'll alert people to the dimensions of the problem and their solutions there. Glow Kids, How Screen Addiction is Hijacking Our Kids and How to Break the Trance. There are questionnaires, and there are ways of determining whether your child is highly immersed in this. But are there other resources that people can go to, certain websites or councils or initiatives?
Well, you know, restart is sort of that's ground zero. Restart is the rehab in Seattle for tech addiction, and they're very good about. They have all the local providers who are familiar with tech addiction, because there are not that many, and so they're a good resource to call if you go on the Restart's website and you call them. And you tell them that you live in Missouri. They can tell you who the local treatment provider is for tech addiction there. I would stress that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So, you know, be very cautious and thoughtful as a parent in terms of how you unleash the technology, and know that the antidote is real life immersion, nature, mm-hmm. nature therapy, sports, music, mm-hmm. all those things that we know. Those are the antidotes to, because you don't want to just unplug a child and have them sit in a room. You want to replace that activity with something much healthier.
Hey, do you want to set an example? You want to set an example, because if you're constantly peering into your screen, mm-hmm. you know, that's a signal to the child that that's where reality exists, and your
right.
level
so
of interaction is impaired.
Mm-hmm. Well, and not only from social learning theory do we know that monkey see, monkey do, that little junior will copy daddy if daddy's on his phone all the time. Little junior wants to be like that. But we also know that, you know, we also call that distracted parent syndrome. You're not really also nurturing your child in the qualitative way that they need. I mean, many of us, I'm sure you've seen, you know, airports and places where the child is tugging at the pant leg of the parent,
mm-hmm.
and the parent can't be bothered because they're on their device.
Yep.
And eventually the child then sort of withdraws and pulls away. And they're, so not only is it bad because the child is emulating the tech behavior, but he's not getting that intrinsic, consistent nurturing that they need to not fall into tech addiction because the parents are off in their own world. So that's part of it as well, too. Be mindful of the impact that you're having when you're not present for your child, when you're physically present for your child.
And are you yourself a resource for this? Because you are a psychologist in practice in the mm-hmm. Long Island area, Stony Brook University. Is this something that you deal with?
My practice is in the eastern. I'm in Southampton, so I'm in the eastern end of Long Island. But you know, I hate to. It's almost embarrassing to say, but we do also do Skype sessions, but sometimes we do have to use technology because I do also treat young people in remote locations because. Sometimes that's all we can do. So we try to talk about a healthier use of technology sometimes, mm-hmm. like Skype, to be able to provide teletherapy if we have to, for kids who have more problematic technology usage. Hillary Cash,
we start
talking about
website?
Digital vegetables. Yeah, I have my website is, it's drkardaris.com, www.drkardaris, K-A-R-D-A-R-A-S.com.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and if you send a message by carrier pigeon, you'll answer. Okay, I'm sure that
there's my email is on that website, so okay. I'm.
You're not a complete Luddite. You're not a Luddite. You just want to.
No, yes, I have my Amish wagons outside, and I'm going to churn milk in a little bit. But other than that, no, I'm not a Luddite.
Good. Well, this is a very, very fascinating discussion, and it's crucial because I think the future of our society. Is at stake. This is a generation at risk. And, you know, we can point to the hazards of a bad diet. We can point to the hazards of sedentary lifestyle. But this is an equally challenging and pervasive problem. And we really need to be aware of it as parents, grandparents, and educators, that this could be the death knell for an entire generation.
Yeah.
So thanks very much for investigating this and bringing it to our attention.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.